This is your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. Our topic is estate planning, and we're focusing on if you or you and your spouse leave your home by will or trust to your child or children. We're going to be discussing the issue of whether or not the Proposition 13 property tax basis passes on to your from the parent to the child or the children. And we'll also talk about federal capital gains tax issues regarding property valuation for your child or children. My guest is John Martin. He's a specialist in estate planning, trust, and probate law, certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. His office is in Menlo Park. This segment of Your Legal Rights is funded by the Capital, pardon me, not by the Capital, by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, which certifies specialization in 11 fields of law. It's also funded by the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which certifies 4 areas of the law. Additional funding is by the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. And John, welcome to the program.
Thanks, you.
Very nice to have you here. Why is this important?
Right. Why are we
guy who brought this to my attention. Right. Why is it important?
Right. Why on a Wednesday night are we talking about property taxes?
Yes.
But it's an extremely important topic in part because other taxes, estate taxes, and capital gains taxes that are so much more commonly discussed in news media are becoming less important. It used to be just a few decades ago that only a few $100,000 could be passed free of estate taxes, so everybody would focus on them. You'd see AB trusts for everybody, and we can talk about that if you'd like later. Capital gains taxes, when somebody dies, there's a full step up in cost basis for the assets that they own. So not a very important issue, generally speaking, when somebody passes away, because the heirs can turn around and sell property without recognizing capital gains tax. But property tax has become extremely important relative to those taxes. Real estate has appreciated substantially in California. Many have bought a property at very low values. It's not uncommon for me to hear that somebody has paid $50,000 for a property in a very prosperous area, Palo Alto, Menlo Park, San Francisco, and that now the property's worth millions of dollars. And for those that might be thinking, how can I preserve that property tax basis for myself, for my heirs, it becomes an extremely important question. And so we can talk about some exceptions to the change in ownership rule. But generally speaking, when I transfer property, whether it's by gift or by sale, there's going to be a change in ownership and the property will be reassessed, and we can talk about exceptions.
Well, let's do this, if you would. If someone, generally speaking, and maybe we can take an example of a valuation, if you would, and perhaps use it during the program. Let's say the parents bought their residence for $500,000 some years
sure.
ago, and they live in a more expensive area in California. And let's say today the property is worth $2 million. And they want to leave the property to a child or children, and either by will or trust. And what are the consequences upon the parent's death?
Sure. Well, that's an excellent example, because they must have a very low property tax basis, $500,000.
Which would be Prop 13.
Prop 13.
That, yeah.
And so, and that property tax rate can only increase by a maximum of 2% each year.
Mm-hmm.
So they're probably only paying a relatively low property tax bill. If it were reassessed today, they'd be paying over $20,000 per year at a $2 million value.
Really? Okay.
So assuming this is a personal residence.
Yes.
And they transfer it to a child or children, California law, and this was Proposition 58 that came about in the 1980s, will allow the parent to transfer the child to the child, this residence, their personal residence, without any reassessment of property taxes. So that's a very powerful tool, but there's some traps. For example, you just mentioned children.
Right.
So what two children can share a residence? I mean, maybe
a good percentage argue with each other.
Right.
That's
good,
what you're saying.
You know,
yeah.
Some siblings can live in the same home. I don't know very many that do. Maybe they have families of their own. maybe this is going to be used as a rental property. Mm-hmm. They could inherit this home and rent it out, and they could still avail themselves of a lower property tax rate. But what if they want to just take over the property? They probably are going to ask themselves, maybe I can buy out my sibling,
yes,
transfer right. one half of the cash value, and you said $2 million for this residence. Maybe I can transfer $1 million. Maybe I'd raise some funds to do that, but I would transfer this amount. Unfortunately, I was mentioning there's a parent-to-child exception from reassessment. There's no sibling-to-sibling exception. So if that child cashes out their sibling, there's going to be a one-half reassessment. We're going to have at least half of that property being with a $10,000 assessed value going forward, because that's half of the value, a one-half reassessment of the property moving forward. That's something we'd want to avoid. So what can we do? Well, maybe there's some other cash in the estate that we can use to cash out the other child. But all too often, there's not enough assets. You know, homes mm-hmm. have appreciated so substantially.
That's the major asset.
It's the major asset.
For most people, yeah.
Right, that relative to the other assets, there's just not enough to cash out the other child. So one thing we've done, now it's important for listeners to note that this is a non-binding interpretation of the law that the Board of Equalization has adopted. But what the Board of Equalization has stated is that if a third-party loan is obtained by the estate or the trust, and the trust cashes out the one child with the proceeds of the loan, and as long as the children are still receiving an equal distribution and the trust is otherwise followed in all respects, then we can still get a 100% exception from reassessment, but one child receives the home, now encumbered by a mortgage,
mm-hmm.
and the other child is being cashed out. So a powerful tool, and people may not even realize that that exists. They may just think that they're fated to have to sell the property or to experience this this reassessment.
The could you give us, for example, a simple example that, because I find, although I've been a lawyer for a long time and handled some complicated areas of the law, I am not a tax attorney, I am not an estate planner. Can you give us a simple, possibly a simple example of where people, parents are making mm-hmm. mistakes and how this may affect their kids upon the inheritance, either by will or by way of a trust when the parent dies?
Absolutely. There's many, many traps for the unwary. Another one that I see a lot is that many are advised by CPAs, other attorneys, and it's very well-meaning to set up an LLC to hold
What does that mean, LLC?
Good question. An LLC stands for a limited liability company, and there's some attractive benefits of that because it's a pass-through entity. You're taxed just as if you were holding the title to real estate outright in terms of any rental income you might be receiving from a property. And the best feature is that you have some asset protection, just like with any other business entity, like a corporation. An LLC can give you some asset protection. If you get sued, there's a hedge around that entity that protects you from your creditors.
Protects you personally, your personal self.
Your personal,
so the
correct.
The asset itself, if it is an LLC, if there is some problem, the lawsuit will be brought against the LLC and not you personally, or at least the liability.
Correct. That's
okay.
Essentially correct. And so the issue with property taxes is, while I was just telling you that there's an exception from reassessment when we transfer a residence or a other property, and I can get into the rules for other property beyond our residence, because $1 million in other property can also be transferred from parent to child, there is no exception for an entity transfer. So if I've transferred my rental property into this LLC and then it's left to my children at my death, it will be 100% reassessed at the time of my death for the mere reason that it's held in an LLC.
Mm.
So there may be many that are advised, oh, I should set this up for asset protection and to protect myself without even considering the property tax implications.
Let me ask you this. Let's say that, and we're talking about not the residence. You don't transfer mm-hmm. the residence into an LLC, I presume.
Correct. That's okay. Typically not the case.
So let's say this is some kind of a rental property that someone has or a commercial property. The title is now in an LLC. Obviously, if when a child or children inherit that, what would be the basis from the standpoint if they were to sell it? Let's say the parent bought that at $500,000.
Sure.
Today it's worth $2 million. With an LLC, when the child inherits that LLC property, what would be the basis for the child should the child or children want to sell that?
Now, I think you're referring to basis for capital gains tax purposes.
Yes, for capital gains.
Right.
Yes.
And so I think I mentioned just a little bit earlier that a huge benefit that we can leave for our heirs, and unfortunately we have to be deceased for them to get this, but it's that all property that we own will receive a basis step up at the time of our death, and that includes a limited liability company.
So that is not a big issue. What about if someone wants to leave? Let's say the residence. Someone wants a grandparent or grandfather or grandmother, whoever is still living, wants to leave the grandparents' home to a grandchild.
Absolutely. So I was mentioning earlier that there's an exception for transfers from parent to child. What about to your grandchild?
That's right.
So about 10 years after creating the exception for parents to their children, the Constitution was again amended by Proposition 193, allowing grandparents to transfer a personal residence and the first $1 million of other real estate to their grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
But there's several exceptions, and the most important one is that your child has to already be deceased.
The child that is the parent of the grandchild.
The parent of the grandchild. So many might be aware, just reading media, that there's this grandparent-grandchild exception, but may not know, well, my child actually has to be deceased before that can happen. Another really strange wrinkle in the law is that a child, for the purposes of this exception, is defined as your biological child, adopted child, or an in-law child. So if your child has passed away and you want to leave this home to your grandchild, also your child's spouse must be passed away, must be deceased.
Really?
Yes, for you to do this. And that's a very odd provision in the law, because let's say I was leaving my estate just according to the laws of intestacy. So I didn't have a will. I didn't have a trust. Instead, it just went according to the order that the law provides. In fact, only my blood relatives or my adopted relatives would be able to receive my estate, not my in-law children. So why, with respect to transfers between grandparents and grandchildren, does, when we're looking at the intervening generation that has to be alive, why does it include this in-law child? I don't know. But that's what the law is, and so we have to be aware of that whenever we're advising clients.
It's kind of wild. You're a certified specialist in estate planning, trust, and probate law. Certainly, I find this to be a very complicated area of the law. What can you tell people who are listening, laypersons who are listening, about the significance of someone being a specialist in an area of the law certified by, in this case, the California Board of Legal Specialization? What's the significance in your opinion?
I think it's very important for consumers, because it used to be, maybe several decades ago or longer, I'm not sure, that attorneys were generalists. They would do
everything.
They would practice everything, real estate, divorces, estate planning. Then perhaps recently, because there's so many attorneys, attorneys thought it'd be a good idea to limit their practice. And so as a consumer, how do you know that the person who you're going to has the requisite experience and expertise so that they'd be able to practice competently within that area of practice? Now, it doesn't take getting the certification to have that requisite amount of expertise. You could have a very experienced attorney who's not certified as a specialist.
Mm-hmm.
But what the State Bar and the Board of Legal Specialization has done is created a way for consumers to know that there at least have been some standard achieved by this practitioner. They've practiced for a certain number of years. There have been judges or other legal practitioners who have signed a document regarding ethics, regarding their experience. And you've also had a separate exam which is taken by that person, which is like a bar exam in their subject. So you can have confidence as a consumer that there is some minimum level of educational attainment and expertise in their area.
Let me just, while we're talking about this, I want to give you all something that you might find very helpful if you do need to have an attorney in any one of the specialties. The California Board of Legal Specialization certifies, as I mentioned at the beginning of the program, specialization in 11 fields of law. The National Board of Trial Advocacy, which is also a funder of this program, certifies 4 specialties in the area of law. And my suggestion to you is, if you want any of the free pamphlets, certainly of the Board of Legal Specialization, and there are 11, or if you want to find out, for example, who the certified specialist may be in your area, you can go to the Internet and for your county in California and go to www.calbar.ca.gov, calbar.ca.gov, and go to the upper left corner of your screen to Legal Specialist. Click that on, and then click on your county, and you'll be able to find out how you can get the free pamphlets and how you can find out who the certified specialists are in your area. And also for the specialization for the National Board of Trial Advocacy, I want to give you that website also, which I think would be very helpful to you if you want. They do Social Security specialization. That's www.nbtalawyers.org, nbtalawyers.org. Also, I want to give you some information in case you're beginning to think a little bit about your income tax return, and maybe you should be thinking about it. On February 22nd at 7 p.m. Pacific time, we'll do our annual program on preparing your federal income tax return, and we'll also have a call a CPA a tax attorney night when you can talk with either CPAs or a tax attorney off the air about your tax questions. And you might want to jot down this number for February 22nd. It's 800-525-9917. 800-525-9917. My guest on this segment of the program is John C. Martin. John is a specialist in estate planning, trust, and probate law, certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization. His office is in Menlo Park. For those of you who listen to the full hour of the program, I'll be giving you our toll-free number in a few minutes, and you can call in and ask John questions. This is a very complicated area. And frankly, my feeling is, as I have been a lawyer, believe it or not, for a long, long time, I've been a deputy DA for San Mateo County in consumer protection for 32 years. I am a consumer advocate, and I think it's terribly important if you get good legal advice. And I'm not trying to get jobs for lawyers. That's not my point. I'm trying to educate you in protecting yourself. And so I think you need to take the time to realize how important it is to get legal advice if you're going to be doing something, whether it's landlord-tenant, whether it's estate planning, whether it's workers' comp or whatever. Let me throw this one at you, John. What if you have a widow or widower coming to you and saying, my spouse died, I've got this property, I'm very concerned about the consequences of my selling my home or whatever. What comments do you have generally? And where are people, why are they so concerned about this? Because you told me before we went on the air, this is not an unusual thing for someone who's lost his or her spouse.
It's not an unusual thing. Time and again, I'll have somebody come into my office. They've lost their spouse, and real estate generally is the most valuable asset that they own. And the thought is, maybe I'm not going to be able to continue to own this house for a variety of reasons. Maybe I'd like to move closer to family. Whatever the reason may be, the thought is, maybe I'm going to have to sell this property. And then the thought is, I'm going to have to pay a lot of capital gains taxes. So I'm locked in. I can't do that. Or maybe I'm just going to have to pay the bill. And this becomes extremely important with respect to the kind of planning that we can do now while you and your spouse are alive. Because if homes are owned in joint tenancy, the mm-hmm. presumption is that each of you own one half of that property. At death, it passes automatically to the spouse.
So you're saying the title mm-hmm. on the deed is John and Mary Smith as joint tenants.
Correct.
Essentially. Okay.
Correct. Now, for IRS purposes, I'm not talking about family law and divorce purposes. I'm talking about IRS purposes. My spouse passes away. One half of the cost basis steps up because that's what they own. They own one half.
Mm-hmm.
My half, there's no change to the cost basis. So if I turn around and sell that property and I've owned it for a really long time, there is going to be some tax that's going to be subject to capital gains tax, some gain subject to capital gains tax. But one thing, a very simple change, would be to hold title in my name and my spouse's name as community property. And of course, there's other implications to that, and we can discuss that. But there's a tax consequence, which is now because, and by the way, this is a huge benefit that Californians have and others that live in community property states. Others don't have this benefit because I now am deemed to own 100% of the property. My spouse is
because
deemed to
of the community property laws.
Correct. We own an undivided 100%, and we both own the same thing because that's how the law is understood. Now, 100% of the cost basis steps up when my spouse passes away. What a difference, where I can then advise the widow or widower, yeah, now you can turn around, we can sell that property, and there's no capital gains tax.
That's really interesting.
Just a document that could be recorded. Now, of course, many might be thinking, well, what about the risk of divorce?
Yeah.
Perhaps if you own this property for a very long time, you've been married for a very long time, it's community property anyway. So mm-hmm. it would make no difference for the purposes of divorce. The area where it might make a difference is where there has been some contribution by a spouse that could be traceable to their separate property mm-hmm. assets. And you say, well, you know, what about that? If I'm changing this to my community property, yes, there's this tax benefit, but there's a potential of divorce. Unless you waive the right of reimbursement, you can take back your contribution in the event of divorce. On the other hand, any appreciation that occurs from the time you record that deed, changing this from joint tenancy to community property, would be split to 50-50. Mm-hmm. So there is an impact with respect to divorce, but one that usually is outweighed by the fact that you can get a right of reimbursement mm-hmm. if that ever happens, mm-hmm. and also that we have such a significant tax benefit, and it makes my job a lot better when I'm talking to a grieving widow or widower.
Let me throw this one at you because I think I need to do it. Let's say a couple, married couple, purchased a home mm-hmm. many, many years ago and paid $500,000 for it. And it was purchased through community property funds. This is a California couple. They've been one or the other has been working, but it's the income or the amount of money that was used was not from separate property, but was from the earnings of the job of his or her or both of them. However, the title, because of then the practice that was being done by title companies, perhaps, was John and Mary Smith as joint tenants, although community property, the income that both parties, one or the other or both, were using to purchase the property was community funds. What do you do there?
So for California purposes, it's your community property. But for federal tax purposes, the presumption of title is that each of you own a one-half separate interest.
So there's a tax consequence there.
Correct.
Even though you bought this with your community funds.
Correct.
So are you saying that to be able to overcome this, what we might do, what a couple might do in that situation where the title is in John and Mary Smith as joint tenants, would be to change the title from joint tenancy to John and Mary Smith as their community property?
They should review the family law question that I just talked about, the right of reimbursement. They should also review asset protection issues because it turns out that community property may be subject to the debts of a spouse to a greater degree than if we held it in separate property. So there's some issues that we need to talk about before we go and transmute property. But yes, just looking at the tax consequences, the tax benefits of holding in community property, yes, just recording a deed and changing it from joint tenancy to community property, as you stated, would yield this significant benefit.
Who would you suggest that this couple see? What kind of an attorney? A tax attorney, an estate planning attorney, or who should they see determine whether or not they might want to have a new deed that shows that this is John and Mary Smith in community property?
Well, your question highlights that there can be a lot of overlap between different areas of law. Here I am. I'm an estate probate law specialist. But what I do dovetails with taxation. It dovetails also with family law.
Mm-hmm.
And so here we have, at its core, an estate planning question, I think, which is where does property go at your death? There's going to be a tax implication. There's going to be a family law implication. So I personally would go to an estate planning attorney for that question. But if there was something that then led to maybe we need to look at what is my separate property, what's my community property, maybe I need to document that through a separate marital property agreement, I would then talk with a family law attorney.
Okay. That certainly makes sense. For those of you who are not, and we're going to end the statewide version in just a few seconds here, actually, but for those of you who are listening to this program for the full hour or not, I just want to let you know that the entire hour of this program, the program is live in the Bay Area, it's live on the internet at www.kalw.org. The entire program is available as a free podcast if you go to www.kalw.org/RSS. And Joanne, I think what we need to do is we need to end the statewide version at this point. All right. Everybody, I want to give you an opportunity to call in if you have estate questions, estate planning questions, if you're thinking about your will or trust or whatever. Our toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. If you would like to call in with a question or comment, certainly I urge that you do this. My guest is John C. Martin, a specialist in estate planning, trust, and probate law. He's certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization. His office is in Menlo Park. Support for KLW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation in both San Francisco and most recently also in Marin County. And for a referral to a lawyer or the Bay Area Mediation Services of the San Francisco Bar, here's the number, 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. 1616. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own at 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. And in California, every county has a bar association and a lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours. Tell them what the problem is, and they'll do their best to find an attorney who's experienced to give you, hopefully, good legal advice, and for a half an hour consultation with minor exception, for half an hour you will pay in the state of California, in most counties, $25 to $35. That's a terrific rate, a great bargain, and I highly recommend it to you. So that's something that's available to you. Additional funding for your legal rights is made possible by the Family Law Section of the State Bar, the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar, the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. So we're going to start taking some of your calls right now, and we've got Fred. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you for having me on.
Hi, Fred. Go ahead.
I'm calling because my mother just recently passed away, and I recently found out that there was a trust of which I am one of the trustees, I guess, or one of the administrators of it. And I don't have any of the paperwork, and we can't find any paperwork. What do we do?
How do you know there's a trust, Fred?
This came from a document there's a small sum of money from a retirement plan that my mother had.
And you don't know if your mother had that retirement plan with the help of an attorney?
Well, no. The money was, there's some money that is going into that trust, and so I know of the trust's existence only because the money is signed to go into that trust.
You mean the beneficiary designation names the
that's
trust?
Right, the beneficiary designation. That's correct. Yeah.
But you can't find the trust.
That's correct.
Right. So we've had this situation before where there's a trust document perhaps named on title to real property or, in your case, now beneficiary of this retirement plan. But we can't find the document. And, of course, first you'd want to make a diligent search to see if you can find the will or trust. And if you cannot, then the solution is actually to go to court and to have a probate. And now you can do a limited proceeding at the beginning, which is called Letters for Special Administration, which would be a temporary measure where you could go in and take control of the account as the special administrator pending the search for the trust and will. But then if you cannot find it, you would have to do a full probate of the retirement account.
So how does actually one even find a trust when all you have is a name?
That's an excellent question, and it's unfortunately one that I'd have to, you know, see through walls or see through bank safe deposit boxes, but you'd look in the usual places. So look through all of their personal items, see if they had a professional advisor who might have kept it in their file, maybe the attorney who drafted the document, perhaps a CPA. This also underscores the importance of working over a long period of time with a professional, that if you have a trust document, which might have been done by a trust mill or through a software program, it's much more likely that the document would be lost.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Fred, you have not sought the advice of an attorney. Is that right yet?
No, I mean, this is just something the family is...
Just happened.
Means, and so we just don't normally involve attorneys.
Yeah. You know, my suggestion, Fred, just so that you have some direction that may be helpful to you, my suggestion at this point is maybe you want to call. I believe you're in San Francisco, aren't you?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think you might want to call the lawyer referral service of the San Francisco Bar. And did you take down the phone number, by the way?
Of what?
Of the San Francisco Bar Association lawyer referral. Did you take that?
Oh, I'm sorry. I missed that part of the
program. Let me give it to you again. My approach to something like this is, since you are kind of wondering, what in the world do I do? I think the best way to get started and get some direction is to call your bar association, and in this case, it's the San Francisco Bar Lawyer Referral Service. The number for you to write down is 415-989-1616. And ask to speak with someone who does, let's say, estate planning, wills, or trusts for a half an hour consultation. And you'll pay $35, Fred. That's the way, in my opinion, to start and to get some direction. And then once you start to educate yourself by doing that, you can then figure out, do I want a certified specialist, as we've been talking about, since my guest John Martin is a certified specialist, or can it be more simply done? And that's my suggestion, okay?
I appreciate that. Thank you very much, and great program.
Yeah, good luck to you, Fred. Take care. All right, we have from Sunnyvale, I hope I pronounced your name correctly, Ashak. Is that correct? Ashak?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, I had a question. So we have a trust, a living trust, which is an ABC trust to deal with tax issues. And it then passes on to our daughter if both of us have died. and it stays in a trust, in kind of an intermediate trust till the daughter is 33, after which all of it goes to the daughter. And the question I have is that while it's in this intermediate trust before she's 33, it is protected from creditors, and it's also in some sense not part of a community property if she's married. But once it passes on to her, are there ways to keep it in some kind of a trust so that it's protected from creditors, and potentially she has an option to maybe not make it part of a community property?
Well, that's an excellent question, because the default rule, of course, is that all property that you acquire by inheritance is your separate property. But all too often, a child will take that and commingle it with their spouse, or put it into a joint account. And so one option which I explore often with clients is, instead of having a forced distribution from the trust — now it sounded like in her early 30s, the trust must terminate and go all to your spouse, to your child. Now, we have no idea actually where the child might be at 30-something years of age. Maybe they're in the middle of a divorce at that age. Maybe they're in the middle of a lawsuit. So much more wise of a provision would be to say that the child has a right of withdrawal that they need not exercise. Now, of course, you could force on your child that the trust must always stay in effect for them, and most parents don't choose that for their children. Sometimes it makes sense to do that. That would be a blunt instrument protecting your daughter. But if you wanted to give her the ability to choose, you could have a right of withdrawal over the trust, and perhaps it would make sense to let her become trustee of her own trust at the time when that right of withdrawal came into effect. So there you have some protection in the event that she's divorced, plus she has control over her trust. A very powerful combination.
Has this been set up, Isaac, by an attorney for you?
Yes, it was set up by an attorney. So right now, if she's under 33, there is a court. She's a court trustee, okay? And, you know, at 33, it terminates. And so what we were told by the lawyer was that at that point, you have to terminate the trust, and then she can create another trust to put it in. But, you know, like, I was worried that she may not have enough sense to do it, or there might be, like you said, a lawsuit going on at that time. So we could just say leave it in the trust and simply say right of withdrawal, and she becomes a full trustee. That's it. That's actually simple.
Correct. That's generally what I do when I create trusts for children. I don't like forcing. You know, in the past, you'd see almost every trust had a forced distribution for the child. And again, we have no idea where she may be. So I think it's incorrect that we're required to distribute a trust. I mean, think of the Rockefellers, right? They don't have trusts like that. They continue for generation after generation. So even anecdotally, you'd know that that's false. But here in your case, yes, you can continue it longer, and you can give that choice to your daughter.
You realize this is a living trust, and the trust that remains, I think, is called a survivor trust or something like that.
Yes.
So it's an ABC trust, and I think there is one of these three trusts that remain. I think it's called a bypass or a survivor trust. So it's not a special trust for the child. It is the remains of the living trust.
Ashak, let me mention something else to you. We try on this program to try to get people going in the right direction. You have many questions, many concerns, many possible problems that you're very concerned about. The State Bar of California does not permit my guests or me to give specific legal advice. And with the number of questions that you have come up with and the concerns you have, I frankly would advise you to go back to the attorney who set this up, or if that attorney is not available, to see another attorney who does wills and trusts, and try to get some answers from that. So I wish you good luck, but I think we're going to move on, okay?
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much for calling. Susanna, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, thank you so much. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you.
God bless you if you sneezed. Go ahead. You still there? Yeah, go ahead, Susanna.
Specifically, I'm wondering if there is a way to add my child to the title while I'm still alive and have them take advantage And then as I was listening to the program, you brought up the joint tenancy. And if my spouse or I were to pass away, could we pass along, could our half of the tenancy be passed along to our children and enable them to take advantage of our current tax basis? Does
okay.
that make sense?
All right. Well, the short answer is yes, but I would recommend that you not use joint tenancy to pass a residence to a child, because there's so many reasons that would – I mean, yes, it's a simple way to transfer property at death, but how do we know what the order of deaths will be? Perhaps the child will pass away first. There could be a lawsuit if the child is divorced, you know, that this property might be subject to the action. Of course, if it's their separate property, not the case. But if it's a lawsuit, perhaps the property could be foreclosed upon to satisfy a judgment that the son might have. It is not asset protected. It's not. So there's many other ways to transfer property at death. Of course, the most popular is with a revocable living trust. For real estate, there's also just this last year a new type of deed, which is called a revocable transfer on death deed. This is brand new this year, and it is a way to name the your child as a remainder beneficiary of the property under this deed. That for several other reasons, which are beyond the scope, I think, of the answer, there are some downsides to using that. For example, what if we don't have sufficient property in an estate to pay debts? Then this real estate's passing outside of the rest of the estate. We can't use that to pay the debts. So I think the short answer is to talk to an attorney.
Okay. Can I just follow up on the initial question?
Go ahead, Susanna.
If I wanted my child to take over my home and for me to no longer have interest in it, is there a way to pass that along and have them take advantage of my current tax basis?
Yes. You could leave the property outright to your child under the terms of your will. Or, in fact, you could be silent, and the laws of intestacy would just pick up whatever you own and give it to your blood. Is this your only child?
Yes.
And are you currently married?
I am currently married.
And are we talking about the death, and does your husband have any children as well?
No, yes. Just assuming my husband and I no longer wanted interest in the property and wanted our child to take over full
right.
responsibility.
You're saying take over right now. Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying.
Yes.
While you're
yes.
both still alive. Okay.
While we're both still alive.
Yes, yes, you could gift or sell the property to your child, and actually that would also be accepted from reassessment. It doesn't have to be at your death. And so that
okay.
is a very important question. Many might think it's just at your death. No, it can be during your life, and it doesn't need to be a gift. It could also be a sale.
So I think, all Susanna, right. as John suggested, you really, because of what you're concerned about, you really need to see an attorney to get you going in the right direction.
Certainly. Well, I appreciate this guidance in the interim. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Okay, Susanna, thanks for calling. If you're in the San Francisco Bay Area, the San Mateo County Law Library has a consumer law clinic on Mondays at 10 a.m. If you need help with a debt collection case, or if you'd like to attend a Know Your Rights workshop and get free information from an attorney before you go to court, this is on Mondays at 10 a.m. Anyone in the Bay Area is invited to come. It's at the San Mateo County Law Library, which is located at 710 Hamilton Street in Redwood City, across the street from the courthouse. You must RSVP, however, and if you'd like to jot down the number for consideration to go to one of these sessions, it's 650-358-0045. 650-358-0745 for the Consumer Law Clinic. All right, we have now Ernie. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Well, I have a question about revocable living trust, which my wife and I set up, and seemed very puzzled by the fact that, let's say I die, and then there is a survivor's trust and a bypass trust set up, and my wife is the survivor, so she spends everything down in the survivor's trust, and then by that point she can draw from the bypass trust which are my assets that I contributed to this before we were married. Is that essentially correct?
At the first death, the bypass trust will typically consist of your one half of community property and any separate property of the deceased spouse. But it will be limited to the exemption amount in the year of the first spouse's death if it's a formula AB trust. In other words, if it's a trust that says, put whatever amount I own at my death up to the exemption amount. Sometimes there's a different kind, which is called a disclaimer. I won't get into that. But the important thing, Ernie, just to answer a different question that you didn't ask, is that needed anymore? And it may be that AB trust for you is not needed if your estate is under $5.5 million, because AB trusts were used for many, many years when exemption amounts for estate taxes were in the hundreds of thousands of dollars, so that we could double the amount you could leave tax-free to heirs. So now with an estate below $5.5 million, it makes no sense to do that. You were mentioning children from a prior marriage.
No, there are none.
There are no children from a prior marriage?
Or,
okay.
Or our marriage.
So if the estate is over $5.5 million, you have the ability, you could either use a bypass trust, or you could use what's called portability.
Well, if I may.
Go ahead.
We don't have that much money.
So you don't need a bypass trust.
Well, but I'm happy to hear that, except the lawyer set it up, as I understand it. He set it up.
Prior to 2012?
I think it was even more recently than that. Or actually, it was an amendment to a previous trust. So it was completely rewritten. This is the other questions that come up. You know, we set it up in 1996, and then it changes, or we had it reviewed, went through this again, and completely rewrote it. But again, it was set up with a survivors and a bypass trust. And my wife understood that she couldn't touch the bypass trust until she had depleted all the assets in her survivors trust.
Right, it's pretty restrictive, isn't it? And I was talking earlier about capital gains tax, and remember, everything you own gets a step up in basis. But let's say you predeceased your spouse. She is not deemed to own the assets in the bypass trust. You're thinking about the practical difficulties, and yes, it's practically difficult to have a bypass trust. You can't draw on those funds unless you you can make out a need for them for your health, education, maintenance,
right,
or support.
Right.
But even more important is the tax issue, I think, which is at her death, there would be then a carryover cost basis, and your heirs may end up paying way more capital gains taxes than otherwise they would pay if you had no bypass trust.
What do you recommend that Ernie do now? Obviously, he is very concerned, as well as his wife, about this. What do you recommend he do?
Well, there's two.
In terms of what's the next step for him? Not what is the legal effect, what is the next step? What should he do to start further educating himself?
Ernie, I think it is a good idea to talk to a specialist who's going to be familiar
with
AB trusts.
Ernie, please don't talk. I want John to finish what he was...
Okay. And, you know, to somebody who's familiar with the change in law that occurred in 2012 with the new estate tax regime that we have, to then take it from there regarding whether you eliminate that bypass trust as part of your estate plan.
All right. We'll have to talk to a specialist.
Yeah. Ernie?
You heard what I was trying to say was I thought we had already seen a specialist, but apparently he may not have been as familiar with the law as he should be.
Well, at this point, Ernie, because of your worrying and concern about this, you need to see a specialist again. And my suggestion is you might want to, go to the website for the Board of Legal Specialization. And you're in what county?
Marin.
In Marin County. Go to the Board of Legal Specialization, www.calbar.ca.gov. Go to Legal Specialists in the upper left-hand corner of your screen, click that on and click Marin County, and then look for estate planning certified specialists and give a call to one or more and kind of find out what's this going to involve in terms of my coming in for an initial consultation, et cetera, in terms of cost, et cetera. I really feel you, with your worry, I can tell by the worry in your voice, you just got to do this.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Glad you called, Ernie. Take care. Bye-bye. George, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Yes, good evening. Mr. Martin, first I want to thank you for this information. Very informative stuff. I have one clarification on information you shared tonight and one question for you. So the first clarification I had was, I understand the Prop 13 carries over to the children that are named as beneficiaries in a family trust, correct?
Generally speaking, yes. It doesn't matter if it's a trust or outright. The Prop 13 basis can still carry over from parent to child.
Okay.
For a personal residence, yes.
And if one child, again, wants to buy out the other child, that loan that will buy out the other sibling will pay off the sibling, and the other child inherits the deed, but still under the same tax basis, correct?
If the child is contributing the funds for the loan, then there's a partial reassessment. But if the trust allows the trustee to take a loan from a third party, and that third party is unrelated to the beneficiaries,
yes,
and then there's a deed of trust encumbering the property,
yes,
then you can, according to annotations that are published by the State Board of Equalization, avoid a reassessment, providing that the trust is still followed, so you still have an equal distribution among the children.
Okay, that's clear. The second question I have, my father passed away in 2002. He was the part owner of the property that I am a beneficiary of. Something I didn't understand back then when my mother's tax accountant asked me to get a assessment for estate tax purposes. I didn't understand that until now. When you said that one spouse passes away, there's a step up in the step up basis, I guess.
Right.
Is that correct? So my question is, the assessment that I did not get done in 2002, can that assessment still be done, I guess, as an historical assessment? And does it have to be a hard number assessment, or can it be done as comps for property values that were, 2002 property values?
Sure. So you're saying, can I go back in time and determine the value in 2002 for capital gains tax purposes?
Yes.
With a retrospective appraisal? And yes, you can ask an appraiser to do a retrospective appraisal. And what they'll do is look at cost comparables at that time and, to the best of their ability, get an appraisal dated as of that date.
Okay. Very good, sir. Thank you very much for all your information.
Okay, George. Glad you called. Take care now. All right. We've got just a few more minutes left in the program, and we have now Ed. Welcome to the program.
Oh, hi, Chuck. This is Ed. You and I have spoken a few times over the years.
Your voice sounds familiar, Ed.
Okay. I'm a single gentleman.
Well, I'm not sure I'll accept that you're a gentleman, but I'll
okay.
Well, go ahead, Ed.
Give you a hard time.
Go ahead, Ed.
So I'm single. I have no children. I do have a niece. Is there any way for me to leave her my property in some form of tax-favored status?
Mm.
In terms of property taxes?
Right. Well, property taxes, also avoiding capital gains, all that, yeah.
Mm. Well, the good news is that the step-up in basis at our death is indiscriminate. It doesn't matter where you're leaving your estate.
Mm.
If you own property, you'll get a cost basis step-up for what you own.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the good news. The bad news is that we only have the exception, and I'm talking about exceptions from reassessment for your relatives. We only have your spouse. There's an exception for a spouse, for your child, for your grandchildren. So regrettably, not for your niece.
Can I? You were saying something about giving title to. In other words, while I'm still alive, it's later in life. Could I give her title to my home? Does that avoid the problem?
Unfortunately, it doesn't.
It doesn't. Oh.
Right, if you transferred it now during your life,
yeah.
Still you'd have to have the same exception be available, whether for a child or for a grandchild. So if you transferred ownership to a non-child, non-grandchild, then unfortunately that would be deemed to be a change in ownership for your niece if you did it during your life or at death. And I'm sorry about that.
Not even a trust, a living trust, wouldn't accomplish anything here then, I guess.
The benefit of the trust would be that you'd avoid probate, and then you'd also have some additional privacy, maybe some time savings at the time of death, and maybe it would make some other strategies easier. But no, there would be no advantage from a property tax perspective.
Ed, what's your property worth, roughly?
I think it's probably worth about $1.5 million right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, and you have not seen an attorney, right?
Not yet, but I'm talking to one now, and he's telling me there's no hope.
You're talking to John right now?
Yes, and he's telling me there's really no hope. He's in Menlo Park, which is great, but he's telling me there's no hope.
With respect to property tax reassessment.
I see.
But there's other issues that would lead one to say maybe you should talk to a specialist regarding putting together an estate plan.
Okay.
For, hey, how can I avoid the additional costs, protect beneficiaries if they need protection, deal with my own questions of incapacity, because most of us will have some period of incapacity. Some have the fortune of not having that, but more typically there's some period where you cannot make decisions for yourself. So an estate plan would address all of those areas.
Are you an elder, what is it called, elder tax attorney?
Well, there's a variety of ways of interpreting what that means. I do help a lot of elderly clients. I don't do what's called Medicaid planning, which some elder law specialists, that's what it's referring to.
Ed, with your estate being worth as much as it is, yeah, you got to get on the ball, my friend. And now go see a lawyer. And my suggestion is you might want to go to the Board of Legal Specialization website, www.calbar.ca.gov, and go to legal specialists and see who the certified specialists are in estate planning for San Mateo County and do it that way. But you need to do it instead of worrying so much. Thanks for calling.
I hope you give John Martin's contact information.
All right.
To Ian here. Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling. John, I want to thank you very much for joining us.
You're welcome.
It's been a treat to have you on the program. And for Ed's benefit, my guest has been John C. Martin, who is a certified specialist in estate planning, trust, and probate law, certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization. John's office is in Menlo Park. Thanks, John, very much for joining us.
Of course.
Next time on Your Legal Rights, everybody, we're going to have a discussion and update of Medi-Cal and Medi-Cal for long-term care laws and issues. My guest will be Peter Stern, a specialist in estate planning, trust, and probate law, also certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization, and Pat McGinnis, the executive director of California Advocates for Nursing Home Reform. This segment of Your Legal Rights has been made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, and also by the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which also funds the public radio satellite transmission of the program for national distribution. We do have some stations that are carrying the program outside of California. Thanks for joining us on Your Legal Rights Public Radio, and I do hope that you join us next time on your public radio station. So take care, everybody. Protect yourselves, and don't just sit and do nothing. I'm Chuck Finney.